at 7 on ESPN Las Vegas, 1100 AM and 100.9 FM, KWWN Las Vegas. Live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Here we go on a Thursday. Cofield and Company on the road. Stadium Swim, Circa Las Vegas. Damon is back in the studio dancing to the music out here at Stadium Swim. Pretty good crowd on a nice Thursday in April, 81 degrees. Fired up. We got NBA playoffs. We got the final VGK game of the regular season. We'll set that up a little later on. Lots of recruiting news. More Caitlin Clark. That's enough of that tease. I will come out of the gates here, Damon, saying, first of all, how are you, buddy?
Fantastic. How about yourself, Steve?
I'm good. I'm excited. Topics keep coming down the pike. One of them includes, you know, we're going to do a Mountain West Conference check-in to see what was going on around Boise with football and basketball, and they got a lot of neat NIL things going on. And lo and behold, how about this as a matchup for topics? BJ Raines is going to come in from Bronco Nation News, and, you know, the big boys around the conference for basketball don't often lose people they want. And, you know, eventually we're going to find out what happens with San Diego State. I don't know if you saw that Micah Parrish, their wing, he's in the portal, and he's got major offers, including Michigan. So Boise, you know, they did a bracketology the other day, they being Joe Lunardi, and we'll eventually get to it. I think I've had it on the docket since Tuesday, but they had – Lunardi had six teams from the Big East making it next year. Again, this is bracketology for next season when most teams are not complete. But I like it. If they're going to update it, I think it's kind of cool. A lot of it's based on reputation, but some of it is based on who you have. So the Mountain West only had two teams, Damon. Two in the field, two.
From a conference that just had six this past season?
Maybe this is punitive, or maybe when Lunardi looked around the conference, he's like, there's no players. Now, Boise is in the field as of now. San Diego State is not in the field. What?
The disrespect.
Yes. Well, they have to rebuild their team. And like I mentioned earlier, Micah Parrish, good two-way player, is out. And Lamont Butler is actually looking at the NBA. If Lamont Butler leaves, that's a very big player to replace. The two teams are Boise and New Mexico. No UNLV. UNLV team is not complete yet. But what it said about Boise was most of the cast is coming back. Well, just a little while ago, BJ Raines, big newsmaker, big sports reporter in Boise, reported that Chibuzo Agbo, or Abo, who's a 6'7 wing, is a really good three-point shooter, is absolutely a power four player, you know, from the physique standpoint. And he did actually come from Texas Tech. Yeah, he gave more details on him being in the portal because it looked like he was going to look at the NBA and then come back. He's not coming back. So he told Raines that he's already got a $500,000 offer.
Good
for a wing player in the Mountain West Conference. We've been trying to tell you, right, Damon, on this show that the money is so much bigger than you could imagine at the Power 4 level. And then at this level, Group of 5, they've got budgets. Say most of the real competitive schools at Group of 5 can be somewhere between like $500,000 and $1.2 million with their team budget to put together a whole team. We're talking about Power 4 schools being $1.5 up to $6 million. That's how big this thing has gotten. So Boise will have to do some work. So we'll get an update from BJ a little later on. And really what I wanted to get into is they have the best running back in the conference, in the Mountain West Conference. And they may have the best player in the Mountain West Conference in Ashton Gentry, who's just freaking awesome.
But can I tell you that this news of Boise losing a star player makes me a little happy?
I'm sure it does for everyone. Because I think, you know, Boise considers itself pretty big time. And I don't know how they got their redshirt frosh transfer quarterback from USC, Malachi Nelson, but they got him. They got him, so they got a budget. So let's talk NBA playoffs coming out. What do you think last night of Sixers and Heat? We talked about it a lot. These are organizations that are not accustomed to having to play their way into the playoffs, and Philly got it done.
They got it done, but, Steve, I've got to take it back to the first quarter, about 2 seconds left. Jimmy Butler on the fast break sees two defenders coming, tries to hit him with the pump fake, goes into the contact, and he was down for the count for a while. I thought he was out of the game right there. And I picked the Heat to win that game. But with Jimmy Butler, you could tell that his knee was going to be bothering him for the rest of the game. So I know it was a very close game. The Heat, they did have a double-digit lead in the first half. But coming down to the wire, the Sixers were just able to get it done. Joel Embiid, you know, still the best player on the court. So the Sixers were able to pull it out. But at the end of the first quarter, I knew it wasn't going to be looking good for the Heat because Jimmy Butler's knee was going to be bothering him.
Do you feel like Butler may have done it to himself, or was he just playing the right way?
I hate to say this, Steve, but he did it to himself. It's 2 seconds left in the first quarter. Go up, take the foul, or get the shot blocked. Because when you do the little hesitant, oh, I'm going to get the defender to jump in the air, and he landed right on top of him. And now he's got an MCL injury that's going to keep him out for weeks. And obviously he's not going to be able to play in the next play-in game to get the 8 seed against the Bulls.
We told you a couple days ago, and it's been a theme for the last 3-4 years, that the NBA playoffs are really a war of attrition. It's which teams can make it through the playoffs healthy. And we've seen so many years where players go down and that just ends the hopes. At least that year's hopes in the NBA playoffs. And by the way, before you jump on this, NBA players or pansies, Damon, let's mention real quick what happened along the path to a cup for VGK. That Panther team, by the time they got to the cup, was beat to you know what.
Oh, man, so many injuries. I think Kachuk was out there playing with half an arm. Or I don't know what the actual injury was with Kachuk, but every game it was just, man, Matthew Kachuk, just a warrior for even making it out there on the ice.
Now, I think VGK was just as big and strong and a lot faster and pounded more damage on him. But that's what the playoffs are now, man. It's about durability. We know that Giannis is coming into the Pacers series all beat up. That series, which I'm still intrigued by, I have to check the number today, but basically a pick 'em. I think the Pacers yesterday were -1. Check that. The Bucks were -112, but it's because of the Giannis factor. Maybe he misses games. Maybe he goes out in the series. Who the hell knows? We know the Pelicans won't have Zion on Friday because of a hammy, so that's a big deal. I would assume Oklahoma City is rooting for a gutty, gritty winning effort by the Pelicans.
That would be perfect.
Wouldn't they make it nice as a #1 seed to kind of ease into the playoffs with a limited team on the other side?
Yes, if the Pelicans were to rally around, if Brandon Ingram and CJ McCollum said, you know what, we're going to make up for our poor performance in the first play-in game, and we're going to perform like the superstars we get paid to be.
Yep.
Oh, but the Thunder would be licking their chops. Thank you.
So back to the Sixers for a second. So Sixers are all set up. It's a 7-2 series. We previewed this yesterday, trying to figure out what the line would be. Clearly a 2, anytime it plays a 7, is a healthy favorite. But it's the Knicks. And the Knicks, I don't feel like people respect them. I think they look at the Sixers, who were 31-8, with Embiid, and they're like, we can't do it. If we make the Knicks too big a favorite, we're going to get pounded with money back the other way on the Sixers. So I think this is a golden opportunity to make a bet here. Am I wrong? I took the Knicks this morning.
Oh!
It's -110 each way. There's value there. And then I can bet back in the series.
You can't, but when you mentioned that, I thought you were going to say the Sixers, because for me, the Knicks, they have, I call it a curse of a Tom Thibodeau-led team where they overachieve in the regular season and then the playoffs come around. Remember, no Julius Randle. And Jalen Brunson, hey, as our Becky Hammon said, hey, small guards, he's a 1A. Is he going to be able to get it done in the playoffs? I think all of those factors are going against the Knicks in this series.
I don't. And I'm betting that we get a limitation on Embiid at some point in the series. I hate to bet against guys and bet on injuries, but I don't trust them. And you know what? Here's the thing. I don't like Knicks fans. I think you're annoying. Damon, where are you on Knicks fans?
They are the worst. They made Trae Young their mortal enemy after one first-round series. Come on.
It's the self-importance, and it goes bigger than just this year. They really believe the Knicks are relevant every year and that the Knicks should be super competitive on the free agent market. And what they fail to understand is James Dolan owns them, and other players who potentially could leave their teams are not stupid. Like, they know who the owner is. They know how he treats the players. They know his reputation. So you're hamstrung there. No one cares that you named it the Mecca, your arena. No one cares. You can make money everywhere around the NBA. You
it's
can be in the smallest
garden,
markets.
Steve.
Like, it, I mean, it's a cool venue. I've been there. It's I mean, dozens of times covering games and as a fan. Okay, neato. But it's, you know, when you have a bad owner, it doesn't sell it. And there's an intensity there. If you don't win, there's a lack of gratefulness for what you're having to deal with the owner. So let's go back in time, because this is, we talked about this a lot on Cofield and Company back in the day. And you know what? My take was about the same. And when was this pitch? When was the initial LeBron pitch?
This would have been 2010.
So back then, the angle on Cofield and Company was, he doesn't care that you're in New York. And the attitude from, not with the Knicks, but from some of the media people and fans was like, if you don't get it done here, shame on you.
A championship anywhere else won't mean as much as a championship in New York.
And then when he turned him down, he was like, oh, he's afraid to play in New York. He's not afraid. He had better options. He got a chance to go to Miami. They won. Stop. But it's the bloviating about, you know, everyone in every market has a bit of, you know, bloated self-importance, but nowhere more so than New York. I cannot believe this is a real video.
This is
not like an SNL thing.
Real.
I mean, clearly, it's, unless it's AI, it's from back in the day because Gandolfini's in it. So they put together a video pitch, and I think this came out on which show? Pablo Torre's?
Pablo Torre Finds Out.
They said the actual video was 10 minutes long. So LeBron James, a future billionaire, top-notch businessman, is being pitched by a 10-minute video. Here's the part where they have the Sopranos play this whole role, and I love the Sopranos.
Yeah, I'll take it down.
Tony, I'm so glad we moved to New York. Life is so much better now.
Yeah, life's good here, Carl. Even if we are in the witness protection program.
Now, we just got to find a place for your friend LeBron to live. What's he like?
Well, he's a modern guy, but he respects tradition.
Well, here's something classy on the east side.
Was it big enough? It's going to be entertaining a lot of people in New York.
It's very expensive.
Oh, that's not going to be a problem. You got to find something magnificent. Something there's nothing in the world like it, one of a kind, like he is.
Well, here's a place. It says it gets really loud there. Take a look.
The garden.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's going to be perfect for him.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is...
Oh, my God.
With a Jay-Z to close out.
Yeah. And the words of my grandmother, Modern! What kind of pitch is that? And it is actually Gandolfini. He's got a beard. The show is over. It's a pretty good video. I guess if you were recruiting someone to St. John's, it's the NBA. It's the Knicks. It's amateurish. What are we doing? And now Knicks fans know that's what the buffoons who are running the Knicks put together to try to get LeBron James. I don't know why. Can't imagine why he said no.
That's the best part. I'm just thinking of the clip when they click that on the projector, you know, on the slide. And LeBron, you're going to love this next part.
Oh, my God.
When the lights came back up, were they expecting him to just... Give me the contract now.
Okay, a couple things I thought of. One, am I going too hard that they had a show that was based in New Jersey and New Jersey folks pitching New York City? That bothers me as someone from New Jersey. Second part is that was like a step above. When you go to Reed Airport now, do you ever see? I don't even know if they play them anymore. I've kind of tuned them out. Do they still play the videos of different characters and how to behave and operate?
I have no idea what you're
TSA,
talking about.
Like Carrot Top's done one. They have all these different Blue Man Group. Like, that's what it felt like. Like, it's LeBron James. This is the best you got? It's a Sopranos freaking New York pitch? And now you wonder. You know, 15 years later. Listen, they got a guy they could build around, but beyond that, where are the free agents who want to go play for Dolan and play in New York? Bizarro, man. Bizarro. You know, I want to get into the draft a little bit here. The best thing I heard all week on what to look for when you turn on the tape, how you grade draft prospects, actually came from a current player in the league with the Raiders, Max Crosby.
I have all the time and energy in the world because, number one, I'm sober. None of it would be possible if I didn't clean up my life. So at the end of the day, instead of recovering from a long night or going out and doing this and wasting time with friends who really aren't there for me, in the end of the day, I got the right people in my life, the greatest tight-knit circle I could possibly ask for, and I chase f***ing greatness in every single way of my life, every day.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
Max Crosby, we're going to get his take on what team should be looking for in the draft in a little bit. Raider defensive end. Curtis Terry is in, high level athlete, still very high level, but professional player overseas. You are. Your brother, of course, played in the NBA. You played for the Rebels, voice of the Rebels. What's going on, Curtis?
Not much, man. I don't know about high level athlete these days, but I'll take it.
Well, higher level than everyone else on the broadcast around you. I know this sounds cheesy, but when I see someone like Max Crosby and hear him say, I chase greatness every effing day. Like, I think all of us should think that way. I don't know that we can. But that is a dream attitude for a coach and we'll say a college program. If you had the formula to discover people who have that attitude, you could never lose.
Oh, 100%. I think that's like trying to capture the fountain of youth, right? I mean, if you could go into life and attack every day with that same attitude that Mad Max just mentioned, I mean, every day would be rainbows and lollipops. I just don't. That's why that people like him, those are the elite people, the people that can channel that every day and to be able to master that. And so it's a great skill. And if everybody could learn it, we all would be in a much better spot. But that's not quite the case, unfortunately. But we can try. We can try for it.
Right. So let's react to the first couple of players come out of the transfer portal for the Running Rebels. Kevin Kruger got the nod from a Jaden Henley. We actually got to see him playing as a super young player at Minnesota a couple years ago. Went to DePaul, 6'7", long, a guy who actually was really coveted by San Diego State at one point. So do you see the fit there? Do you understand why Kruger wanted him?
Yeah, I think what we saw this year in terms of what Keelan Boone was able to bring on the wing, Coach Kruger just wants guys that can do multiple things. That's handle the ball, that's pass the ball, that shoot the ball, that can drive, that can kick, that can play defense. You want long rangy guys on the wing, and I think Jaden Henley kind of fits that. And again, he's still trying to retool that roster to kind of match up to what they have, obviously with DJ in the backcourt and Rob Whaley down low. So you're trying to find the right pieces. And they don't have to have as many pieces as they've had to find in the last couple of offseasons, which is a good thing.
They get a point guard from Boise. He didn't play a lot this year. He played more significant minutes at times 2 years ago. I really like him. I thought he did some damage against the Rebels. But the kid is set up by this fact. There were all these Las Vegas-based point guards, like pretty accomplished players in the transfer portal. It looks like most of them decided to go elsewhere. Frankie Collins, Uzan, who am I blanking on? Oh, the connection to Colin Boswell is not necessarily a Vegas guy, but Kruger has deep ties with his father. I guess, one, do you understand the angst and maybe the lack of knowledge from the fans? And then, two, what did you see out of Whiting when we did see him?
Yeah, I think the Jace Whiting get makes a lot of sense. I mean, obviously, DJ Thomas is going to be your point guard. What he did this year being freshman of the year of the Mountain West Conference, and just the accolades that he was able to rack up and just the notoriety he was able to rack up this season. He's going to be the starting point guard next year. He's probably going to play a lot of minutes again. But when you need to be able to spell him and get him minutes, or if there's foul trouble, or if unfortunately there's an injury, and if you have somebody that's a veteran like Jace Whiting, who played a couple years at Boise State, who knows the conference, who can knock down shots, who's got more size than DJ, that's always a positive. That's a plus. And so I don't think Jace Whiting's going to come in thinking he's going to be the starter, as would a guy like Frankie Collins, obviously like Boswell. And so I think it fits the mold because, again, there's probably a chance that DJ is going to leave after next year. Who knows? But at least you got a veteran guy that can kind of step in and fill that void but still keep the team running and moving smoothly. So I think it makes sense. It's not a home run. It's not a starting guy that you're going to get coming in, but you got to be able to build out that roster. Because you look at this past year, that's kind of where the Rebels struggled at times, was playing with him off the court.
Curtis, so I do want to ask you about DJ Thomas and what you made of the will he stay or will he leave saga that it feels like UNLV, at least UNLV Twitter, was going through for the couple of weeks there before it was announced officially that he's going to stay. How much do you think that the construction of this roster is going to be built around fitting his needs?
that's the only thing it's going to be built around. Having guys that fit with the style of play that he likes to play, and building a thing for the future. And I think it's funny when people say, oh, now the portal thing, that's a whole other animal of itself. I think we knew it was going to come to this. Now it's basically free agency. I think it's getting out of control. But for fans that are the average fans that are watching and just sitting on pins and needles and waiting for every tweet to drop, first of all, you can't believe everything that you see on the internet, let alone on social media. So a lot of that was premature. But I think it's a good fit for DJ Thomas, and there's rumors that he was going to go to Houston or go other places. And I think the reason that he picked UNLV in the first place, because his dad obviously played here, played for Coach Stark. But the fact that he likes being in Vegas, he's a Vegas kid, he wants to be around his family, and his younger brother is still in high school. He likes to be around him and see him play. And so I think it was the right fit for him. And I think they're going to find the pieces that match that. But I think it's hard for fans to be able to call themselves, and especially when the season ended the way it did on a high note. They just want it to keep going and want the excitement. But I think it's gonna pan out and be happy for how these guys put together the rest of this roster moving forward for the next season.
What would you like to see them get? Do they need any more bigs? Because there is an intriguing big that I'm looking at. I was thinking they're going to have to get some scores, and I do think they have to be on the wing, and I do think they need to be maybe not Henley's size, but in that 6'4 to 6'6 range to play on the wing.
Yeah, I mean, I think you might be set on the wings. I mean, I know there was talk about Josh Jefferson, the Liberty High School kid that played with DJ, who went to St. Mary's, the Rebels play this year in Phoenix, who might come to UNLV. I think that's still a possibility. Other than that, I don't think you want to go and try to get too many bigs. I think just the way your roster constructed, you've got Jacob Bannerby, you got Big Rob Whaley, you've got Isaiah Cottrell coming back. So you've got enough guys. If you had someone like Joshua Jefferson, kind of a stretch four, a banger with a big skill set, you can do a lot of different things. But I don't think it's any secret. I think the Rebels need guys that can knock down shots, and you need length and athleticism. And so I mentioned again what Keelan Boone was able to bring to the Rebels once he became eligible for that game against Creighton, and then what he did the rest of the season. I think that's kind of the mold that you want. But that's also what you see across college basketball, but then even at the NBA level. That 3-4 position, a guy that can play the 3, can play the 4, can create mismatches inside, outside, can shoot, can dribble, can facilitate. That's the prime player that you need. Obviously, you need a point guard, a floor general. But if you can have that 3-4 guy that can really control a game, make shots, get stops, do a little bit of everything, like LeBron James, like Kevin Durant, like all those guys in that physique, in that mold, that's where you have an advantage. I think that's what the Rebels are going to try to go after, and that's what's going to fit really for them by having, again, like I said, with DJ Thomas in the backcourt, but giving him a bigger guy that they can kind of do multiple things with.
And I'm not trying to fan the flames. But no, but I'm going to mention the portal's open here for a couple more weeks. Anything can happen, so do not be shocked. There are schools out there that keep upping and upping their NIL money. I mean, I just read a report today that Jerry Jones is willing with the Kentucky players who are leaving Kentucky to double what they were getting at Kentucky. We don't know what's going to happen, and I think Boise actually got a little shocked today. I don't know if you saw it, but their wing, Chibuzo Agbo, was thought to be in the portal, but mostly looking at the NBA and coming back. And then it broke about an hour ago that's it. He's in the portal. And he actually said, or someone around him said, he's already got an offer upwards of $500,000 for a 14-point per game, good 3-point shooting wing in the Mountain West Conference. But I guess it goes back to your point. People want 3-and-D guys, so they're worth a lot of money. But again, don't be shocked, because I think Boise is a little shocked right now.
I would be hell. I'm shocked. I mean, let's be real. And I don't know if he's got a $500,000 offer. I don't know what you're waiting for.
Yeah.
Let's be real. Let's go out there and take that. If he's worth that much, that's great for him. Because then if you say he is, then what are other guys that are averaging 20 points a game that are knocking down a much higher percentage that can do a lot more things on the court? Then they're worth millions of dollars, and that's where I think it gets out of hand. Yeah. Now again, power to these kids for getting this money. And I think we all knew this a couple years ago. This is where it was going to go, and it's going to become the wild, wild west, and things are going to change with college basketball and Power 5 conferences and et cetera, et cetera. And we don't got enough time to talk about that, but it's going to get a little bit out of hand. But I think the Rebels are in a good spot with what they've got with their NIL program to be able to get the right pieces. But again, I also think it's going to continue to grow, because if the Rebels continue to have success like they did this year, they're going to get more people involved in the city, and we know there's a lot of money in Vegas that can really position this thing to do the right things moving forward, especially with what's going to happen with conference realignment continuing to take place.
Former Rebel Curtis Terry is with us. Of course, played professional basketball. His brother, Jason, was in the NBA. I got a minute left. I think the Lakers can push this deep into a series with the Nuggets. Nuggets are minus 350 to win the series. The over-under for games is only 5.5. Am I a fool?
History probably says yeah. I mean, I think obviously LeBron is great. I think he's having to put in a lot of work and he's having to carry his team a long ways. But the Nuggets they're just really, really good, and they still should have ended up as the one seed. I mean, they blew a couple games late in the season. I don't know how they've got enough people to be able to take them down. Jokic is a matchup nightmare. And Jamal Murray is arguably the best point for the NBA right now. So I think it's going to be tough. But, I'd keep your money and put it somewhere else. I mean, I definitely think the Nuggets are going to be able to get this one, move on.
Curtis, we got to you a little late. Sorry about that. We'll give you some more time next week. Definitely want to talk to you, okay?
All right, guys. You take care. We'll talk to you soon.
There he is, Curtis Terry on Cofield and Company. We'll come back and I got to get to it. It's another point, man, in the food world and restaurants, man. DeMond, they got me. I'm finally broken. They crossed the threshold I thought they could never cross.
Now, back to Cofield and Company, live from Stadium Swim at Circa Las Vegas.
Love having DeMond on the show because DeMond lives like Adam Hill, and I wish we could live. And that is with no shame. Right, DeMond? Zero.
None whatsoever.
If there's a freebie to be had, he's on board. I am riddled by guilt. I'm also cheap. And while I love our high-end steakhouses in town, I do find some of the things that are happening now with our meat prices. And I really appreciate a good steak. But my Lord, I saw a menu the other day, and it had something that crossed the threshold that I never believed could happen. Listen, the steak prices are going up, right? I'm not personally... DeMond, if you have to pay, when things are going well and you're hitting 18 parlays, when you have to pay, what's your upper limit of a steak? Are we looking 90 bucks, 75, 60, 50?
Yeah, 75 is where I'll draw the limit.
Oh! All right! Okay, I think mine's 65.
But I do love a good steak, Steve. But
I love it too. But I can tell you, there are some places I've been to where I've gotten a steak for $65, and I'm like, this is not good enough. I mean, I can be discerning with my taste, right? Like it, $65 plus up to. I mean, there are places now, and we won't even get into Wagyu and other stuff, Kobe, and I mean, there are places now like $80, $90 steaks.
But what do you do if it's bad? Do you just say
you're screwed? Oof. It's just not they didn't cook it well, or it's just not. I mean, a lot of times it's not seasoned well, and oftentimes it's just not a great cut of meat, and that's it. Sorry, man, you paid $82 for a steak. You may have been able to get the same one at another joint for $32. I don't know if you follow enough of my social media. I've put up side by side weeks where I get a couple steaks, and I'll get one for $38, and the other one was $71, and in those cases, the cheaper steak actually was better. Now maybe that's a mental thing. I'm like, oh, this is incredible for this price. And I'm not being fair to Big Boy Steak.
Sometimes Big Boy Steak.
But I will tell you, where we're getting crazy are the sides.
1,000%.
Sides used to be $9, $10, $11. We're now starting to push to $17, $18, $19. And I'll give you the side that I absolutely, I don't tell people in a group to not order it, but I think it is the dumbest order ever. Ordering fries at a high-end steakhouse, I don't care what kind of truffles or oil. Stop. They're fries. Ordering that as one of the sides, to me, is a waste of a side.
That says to me you have a poor palate.
No, what do you mean?
No, I'm talking about the people who are ordering the fries. I'm with you.
Yeah. There's so many better sides. And oftentimes the fries at those steakhouses aren't even fresh cut. It's going to be fresh cut. But I saw a menu the other day, and this is the threshold I never thought we'd see. Wow. French fries as a side for $20. I mean, we've lost our mind. I will do research on this, but I'm guessing – I will buy prices on a lot of things, and I may be dead wrong on this. I will text my French fry expert here during the break. Have potatoes gone up that much? Can you make a French fry that good that at a fancy steakhouse, they're now $20 for a side of fries? I mean, come on now.
No way that's worth it. Also, sometimes at the big boy steakhouses, the sides are separate where you're just paying for the steak. So could you imagine if you thought
that's
the
price... absolutely it. No. That's what I was talking about. Yeah. No, most high-end places, the $60 to $120 steak, it is there by itself. Sometimes they will accompany it with something. No, that's it. So you're picking a side of fries and then they're getting you for $20? I mean, folks, Las Vegas, God bless you if you're getting it.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
Lawyer and host of Suit Up News, Xavier Pope, joins Cofield and Company now.
All right, let's bring in Xavier Pope from Chicago. And Xavier, how you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. How are you, Steve?
Scared. Really scared. What I've witnessed over the last 24 hours, I am so excited about the WNBA. And I've said many times, I will guarantee you, we talk more about Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and NCAA women's basketball and the WNBA. We cover it more than probably any top 35 market afternoon drive show. But boy, oh boy. Mm-hmm. Greg Doyle made a bad misstep, and he is getting slaughtered, the Indy Star columnist. There are calls for him to be fired, and he did something at a press conference that was just clunky and weird, and he's getting crushed for it.
It wasn't clunky and weird. It was creepy. He put up the heart sign to Caitlin Clark. I mean, that's been common in sports. You know, you saw DeMar Hamlin with the heart. Caitlin Clark does it. And then he does it, and she goes, you like that? And he turns around and says, okay, well, start doing it to me, and we'll get along just fine. It sounds extremely creepy. And once he came under fire for it, he basically said that he's been known locally for awkward conversations before asking brashly conversational questions. He said that he realized those might be potentially uncomfortable moments that I usually share with male athletes and coaches, but what type of controversial question is flirting with a woman athlete? I thought it was extremely creepy, and he definitely stepped in it.
I saw that Title IX attorney Nancy Hogshead spoke with Christine Brennan, who I'm a really big fan of, and said not just creepy, but sexual harassment. If they were to go after this guy for sexual harassment, who would do it? Would the team do it? Would Caitlin Clark do it directly? Does that have to be something that's brought up at his newspaper?
I don't know what the Title IX aspect comes from. She's a professional athlete with a professional team on, and she's on in a press conference. That would be something she probably would bring versus maybe the paper or Greg Doyle. And then it has to be proven, the preponderance of the evidence. Was it a crime? No. Would Caitlin Clark want to start out her career suing a reporter, and because he's trying to angle up for access by being a creep? No. But Greg Doyle will have something happen to him. He will be punished for what he did. And I think that probably will be enough to serve for that situation.
Should men just get out of the space of covering women's sports at press conferences and at games?
Absolutely not. I mean, that would be hypocritical. The same, you know, people, Doris Burke that covered NBA basketball there. And there are plenty of really competent women who cover men's basketball, to cover men's sports. And I think that men have the capacity to do that too. I just think they don't have to be a creep. You don't have to be a creep to be a decent guy. That's something that no one expected. People expected him to go and show up and do his job. He didn't.
Xavier, one of the controversies that were swirling last night is Caitlin Clark is now going to get a signature shoe from Nike. I think it's a $10-plus million deal that she's getting. And the only three WNBA athletes with their own signature shoe, Caitlin Clark, Sabrina Ionescu, and Breonna Stewart. Two of those players are on the same team. And that led to the outrage of, why doesn't Aja Wilson, a two-time MVP and two-time WNBA champion, have her own shoe? Do you think there's merit to the discussion of, hey, why doesn't Aja Wilson have her own shoe?
I mean, there's some things to be discussed about in terms of making sure that black women athletes are spotlighted. You saw the coverage in and around on the women's national championship, the undefeated South Carolina, Don Staley, the championship winning coach, and then CNN got under fire for focusing on putting Caitlin Clark and her team and the white members of her team and showcasing them. And then there's also political times that we live in right now, where there's a market that's really kind of buffering up Caitlin Clark, that's this counterculture who kind of wants to see their own version of a great white hype, and that's kind of contributing to her visibility and her marketability. I know she doesn't really want that type of attention, But unfortunately, she's in the middle of a culture war.
Well, we saw this with Paige Beckers a couple of years ago when she won the SB Athlete for Best Female College Athlete. She says that, hey, this is a sport that's built up on the backs of black women, and those athletes, those women, should get more shine. Do you think that Caitlin Clark should come out and make a Paige Beckers-like speech, or just let this play out? Because if you draw attention to it, it might be the wrong attention.
I think Caitlin Clark doesn't deserve to be in this position. No, she didn't ask for it. I think that she can speak in terms of the rights of women and African-American women. I think that that's something that she can choose to do. And making sure that people who support certain types of bigoted ideas and sexist ideas about women, I think that she has the license to speak toward those type of issues, particularly getting the wrong type of attention and the wrong type of fame.
I'm going to be not creepy, but weird. I seriously do not know the answer to this because I'm not a sneaker person. And I'm not really familiar with female-branded sneakers. Are WNBA player sneakers made for women or everyone?
I think it depends on the shoe. I mean, if it's a men's shoe, it's made for a man. And if it's a woman's shoe, it's made for a woman.
So I can't get Caitlin Clark Nikes for me.
You wouldn't be able to, Steve.
Maybe, I don't know how big your feet are, Steve, but maybe you got smaller feet. Maybe you
they're very small.
Shoes.
Very
right,
small. Small all over.
There you go. Caitlin Clark size.
I'm gonna have to do research on this. Like, what's a max woman size that? Like, I'm a 9.5, 10.
Hey, my sister. I have twin sisters. Steve, I'm 6'3", but my sister is only 5'4". She was a size 13 in women's shoes. So,
Big, Steve. All right. I would make a joke there, but right now I'm afraid in this current atmosphere. Xavier Pope is here with. I don't even know what the joke would be. I found a really interesting story last week about white-collar crime, fraud, with a Vietnamese real estate tycoon. And we're talking to Xavier Pope, an attorney out of Chicago. And she ran a fraud that amounted to, like, $27 billion. She got the death penalty. I was wondering how many Americans would be comfortable with white-collar crime, say, like, in excess of in the tens of millions of dollars. And if you get convicted, you're put to death. Too much?
I mean, corporations are people here in America, according to the Supreme Court. But, I mean, you have to always consider that was a woman. Would a man get the death penalty? I don't think so in Vietnam. I think that her sex definitely contributed to that. I think it's her crimes are pretty extreme, but you've seen those are part of the 2008 financial crisis, the Madoffs, and you get significant amount of prison time. Being for the rest of his life, multiple life sentences. So it's not all far off that someone could get put to death. Right. We're not just crossing that line there in
the
country.
You know, the interesting thing is, I don't know that you can truly, in death penalty cases, truly guarantee every time that the person is guilty. In fraud cases, can't you pretty much 100% guarantee that they are guilty? There's always loopholes and DNA mistakes, and not always, often. There are times, I don't know. I saw that story and I was like, wow, Vietnam is hardcore.
Yeah, that's pretty hardcore. I mean, obviously, I don't know what the burden of proof system and what they actually use to convict her. But, I mean, it looks like they're also part of the politics and they have several different changes over in government. So I think that's not just the functionality of a fraud, but also what's going on in that Vietnamese government. Also attempting to attract more business to that country as well.
So we're very worried here in Vegas and on Cofield & Company about Xavier and his happiness and his sports pleasure. And I don't want to keep riding you on this, but the White Sox stadium situation, I saw someone put up a post of what the crowds are looking like right now. You see what's happening with Oakland and John Fisher playing Sacramento and thinking he's playing Las Vegas against Sacramento and torturing the people of Oakland. You don't think it's within the realm of Jerry Reinsdorf to really push for this and line up a bunch of backups and make this into something that's got a lot of tumult for the next few years?
I love that word, tumult. I've tweeted that. I love the word tumult. But there are three times as many fans that are coming to White Sox game as Oakland. The White Sox are currently 26 in attendance, drawing a little bit under 18,000 a game. You have the Rays, the Royals, also the Marlins, also drawing less fans than them. They're just a shade under what Detroit, a division rival, is pulling in. So it's still early in the season. I mean, some of those averages are weighted by, Tom, the weather in some of those early season games. So I think it's too early to tell where the White Sox will ultimately land, but they've always kind of been in the bottom third of attendance in Major League Baseball. So that's not a huge surprise. But it wasn't 1,000 fans in the stadium. That was probably early on when someone first got to the stadium.
Well, if people in the Cofield & Company audience don't know, this is a show that is on Twitter a lot. But I use it a lot for content building. And Xavier Pope up on Twitter, your handle's good, man. And I saw a story. I hadn't seen this Mashable story. Dating culture has become selfish. How do we fix it? And I skimmed through it. This is fascinating. I didn't know a lot of these things were going on. If someone told me that they were getting breadcrumbed, I don't know what that is, and that was in the story. This is a great story about how dating has just become really weird.
Yeah, I strongly recommend you read this article. Dating culture has become selfish. How do we fix it? As someone who's been single for the last 2 years, I've experienced several of these different things. It talks about breadcrumbing, where you are drawing out the affection to use the person. You're getting a little bit, and you're really not serious about going further with them. There were different stories about people inviting two matches to the date at the same time. It's so toxic. And then the whole issue with the ghosting, and then people talking about protecting their own mental health and self-protection when it's really narcissism. And there's just so many options in the dating world. People are just taking people and just tossing to the side to the benefit of the profits for some of these dating companies.
Xavier, something that I wanted to get your thoughts of, maybe you haven't watched it yet, but have you checked out the new Good Times animated reboot on Netflix?
Man, I saw that. The preview, and it was like one of the worst things I've ever seen. I'm surprised it actually made it on air. I know we have the Norman Lear associated with it, Seth MacFarlane, Steph Curry rather involved with it. Some pretty talented named Jay Burrow, Nicole Brown, some talented people associated with this content. So it's pretty shocking to see something that just was. There's tons of negative stereotypes about African Americans, including a baby with a gun. It's something that was disturbing to many people, particularly African Americans, to see something like that. So I definitely don't want to support it after seeing the preview. I was pretty shocked by it.
I got through half of the first episode, and I had all of the exact same thoughts you just said.
Yeah, it was offensive, and I think that Wright does put out whatever you want to. When you're putting out content that makes people look a certain way, would content like that be about other groups, be allowed to make it on air? I don't think so. I think that's the problem with the show.
Last one, we got like 45 seconds left. Jemele Hill tweeted something today, and again, I'm out of the loop on so many things. She said, I never thought I'd see the day where plastic surgery and weight loss drugs were subject matter in a rap beef that did not involve female rappers. What dudes are going at it over this?
I mean, you have the whole series of J. Cole and Kendrick Lamar and Drake, and now Rick Ross getting involved in some of the things that Rick Ross has been saying about Drake, and then Drake saying about Rick Ross. And so some of it does involve plastic surgery and weight loss, taking Ozempic. That seems to be a popular thing that's being taken in the hip-hop world for some of these artists to lose weight. It's a new type of rap beef, but it's been entertaining to watch.
Yes, it is. Yes, over weight loss drugs. Like, you're really a fat ass. You didn't do it through hard work to get skinny. All right, Xavier, have a good weekend. A good conversation. We'll talk to you soon.
Love you guys.
Love you more.
Damon, you knew as soon as I saw the weight loss in a tweet, I was like, I guarantee it's about the O.
Steve, I've got to tell you, one of Rick Ross's best disses against Drake, he said, how you got 25% body fat with a six-pack abs?
And then the nose job. Is that actually going in a song? A nose job beef?
He's just on the IG Live just ripping them.